Okay, listener, get ready, because today we're diving deep into a world under the bed, literally.
Oh, sounds a little spooky.
Well, you sent us this children's sci-fi book, Don't Look Under the Bed, and I have a feeling it's going to be a fascinating trip.
I think you might be right about that.
It's a story about a boy named Matthew who's terrified of what might be hiding under his bed.
You know, a fear that probably a lot of us can relate to, right?
Absolutely. I mean, who hasn't imagined a monster lurking in the shadows? But Matthew, he decides to confront his fear head on.
Brave kid.
And instead of finding a monster, he discovers something far more interesting.
An alien.
Yep, an alien. A fascinating creature named Dorby.
Dorby the alien. Okay, I'm intrigued. So what's Dorby like?
Well, he's not exactly what you'd expect. I mean, this isn't your typical little green man.
Okay, so tell me, what does Dorby look like?
Think four arms, color-changing skin, and a dependence on bioluminescent plants for light.
Wow, that's pretty vivid. The book really brings him to life, huh?
It does, and it makes you wonder, how do they even begin to communicate?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. It's not like they both speak English or anything.
Well, that's the fascinating part. They can't speak the same language, but they connect through thoughts and feelings.
Oh, that's really interesting.
It's like the author is exploring the idea that communication goes beyond words.
Right, like a deeper understanding, that unspoken connection.
Exactly. But it sounds like Dorby isn't just visiting for friendly chat.
Right. Yeah. No, definitely not. He's in a bit of a predicament, you could say.
A predicament. Try desperate. He urgently needs to get through a tunnel blocked by rocks.
And he needs Matthew's help to do it.
He does. And the reason for his desperation, water. It's essential for Galen reproduction. And he's on a mission to, well, ensure the survival of his species.
Wow, so the stakes are pretty high.
They are, and I'm curious to know how Matthew reacts to all of this. I mean, he's not exactly known for his can-do attitude.
Right, not exactly a go-getter.
Mm.
So does he shy away from helping?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But something about Dorby's plight motivates him.
Interesting, so he steps up to the challenge?
He does. He throws himself into helping Dorby, showing us how empathy can really push us outside of our comfort zones.
That's a good point. Sometimes it takes something bigger than ourselves to motivate us, you know?
Absolutely. And it's not just the physical challenges they face. Their cultural differences become really apparent.
Oh, I remember that part. When Dorby offers Matthew some of his food.
The Motrusk root. Right.
Yes. And Matthew is, well, less than enthusiastic about trying it.
Understandably so. I mean, it's not exactly something you'd find at the local grocery store.
Right. It's like dried and kind of weird looking, as I recall.
It makes you think about how often we shy away from trying new things, especially food from other cultures.
It's like a little reminder to be more open-minded.
Exactly. But things get even more interesting when Matthew's best friend, Melinda, enters the picture.
Ah, Melinda. She's a bit more skeptical, isn't she?
Oh, absolutely. She doesn't just take Matthew's word for it about the alien under his bed.
So what does she do?
Well, she demands proof, of course.
Classic Melinda.
She brings this great sense of practicality and humor to the story, and her involvement really pushes the adventure forward.
I can't wait to hear what happens when she meets Dorby.
Oh, it's quite the encounter. Let's just say Dorby is utterly perplexed by the concept of boy and girl.
Oh, I bet that leads to some funny moments.
It does. It also highlights how much of what we consider normal is really shaped by our own culture.
Right, like what we take for granted.
And Melinda, ever the pragmatist, insists on bringing some essential supplies for their adventure.
Supplies? Like what?
A camping lantern and her father's air horn.
Okay, a lantern I can understand, but an air horn, that's an interesting choice.
Trust me, it comes in handy later on. But as they venture deeper into the tunnel, they make a rather unsettling discovery.
What do they find?
Ancient pave paintings depicting a wolf-like creature called the Trisk preying on Dalens.
Oh, spooky cave paintings. Just what you need in a dark tunnel.
It definitely foreshadows some danger, and it raises a big question for Matthew and Melinda. Should they continue helping Dorby despite the potential risk?
That's a tough one. It's like, do you play it safe, or do you face your fears and help a friend in need?
Exactly. And their decision really highlights the power of friendship.
So what do they decide?
Despite their fear, they choose to stay by Dorby's side.
Wow. True friends. Right there. But where does this tunnel even lead?
Well, you're not going to believe this, but they emerge in a very familiar place.
Familiar? Like where?
Their local park.
What? Their park? But how is that even possible?
That's the big reveal, and it opens up a whole new can of worms.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. So what happens next?
Well, Dorby, driven by that primal need for water, takes off running toward the lake.
Uh-oh, and I bet something's chasing him, right?
You guessed it. And it looks a lot like that wolf-like creature from the cave paintings.
The Trisk.
Yep, the Trisk. At least that's what it looks like to Dorby.
Oh, man, this is getting intense. But hold on, isn't their park supposed to be safe?
It is, but to Dorby, it's completely alien and terrifying.
Right, I see what you mean. It's like his fear of the unknown is mirroring our own prejudices.
Exactly. It's a brilliant way for the author to turn the tables and show how fear can distort our perception.
So what happens during this chase? Does Dorby manage to escape the Trisk?
Well, that's where things get really interesting, and Melinda's air horn comes into play.
The air horn. Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat.
It turns out that the fearsome Trisk is actually just a regular dog.
A dog?
Yep, just a harmless dog, probably more scared of Dorby than Dorby was of it.
Oh, wow, that's such a great twist.
It really highlights the absurdity of fear and how easily our perceptions can be skewed.
It's like Dorby's fear of the Trisk is a metaphor for all the things we're afraid of, even when they're not really a threat.
Exactly. But amidst all the chaos, there's still Dorby's mission to reach the lake.
Right. He needs that water.
He does. And remember, water for Galens, it's not just about quenching thirst.
It's how they, well, multiply.
Exactly. So driven by this primal urge, Dorby leaps into the lake.
And what?
He splits into two identical beings.
Wait, what?
He splits in two. It's their unique way of reproducing.
That's amazing. I mean, talk about unconventional.
It's like something out of a science fiction movie.
So there are now two Dorbies.
There are. One retains the original name, and the other is named Melmat in honor of his friends.
Oh, that's so sweet. He really cares about them.
He does, and it shows how deeply their friendship has impacted him.
So what happens next? Do they all just hang out in the park together?
Not quite. As much as they might like to, Dorby and Melmat have to return to their world.
Oh, right. Of course.
But before they go, there's this really touching exchange of gifts.
Oh, I love this part.
Dorby gives Matthew and Melinda some of his precious Motress root.
And Matthew gives Dorby a bottle of water.
It's such a simple gesture, but it symbolizes the bond they formed, you know?
It really does. It shows how much they care for each other, despite their differences.
But now they have another problem. How do they explain this whole adventure to the adults?
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Oh, hey, Mom and Dad, we just spent the night hanging out with an alien under my bed.
Well, they come up with a clever cover story. They tell everyone they were timing the sunrise for a science project.
Smart thinking. I bet the adults just dismissed it as kids being kids.
Exactly. But even though Dorby is gone, the adventure isn't over for Matthew and Melinda.
What do you mean?
Well, Melinda reveals that she took some photographs, not just of Dorby, but of the stars as well.
Interesting. Do you think this experience has sparked a newfound fascination with astronomy for her?
It's certainly possible. It's like she's gone from fearing what's under her bed to wanting to explore the vastness of space.
It's amazing how one experience can change your whole perspective.
It really is. But you know, there's another aspect to this story that we haven't really touched on.
What's that?
The book subtly explores cultural differences, not just through Dorby's confusion about gender roles.
Oh, right, like when he's amazed by the camping lantern?
Exactly. He calls it magic, which highlights a completely different understanding of technology.
I see what you mean. It's like their world has a different relationship with technology. Maybe even a deeper respect for nature.
And it makes you wonder, is there lack of advanced technology by choice?
It's an interesting thought, isn't it? Maybe they've consciously chosen to live in harmony with nature, rather than try to control it.
It makes you think about our own society and the path we've taken.
It really does. And it highlights the importance of being mindful of these differences when we encounter something or someone new.
Especially when that someone is an alien living under your bed.
Right. But, you know, the book also makes us think about our own fears and how they can sometimes be unfounded.
Just like Dorby's fear of the Trisk turned out to be a harmless dog.
It's a good reminder that our fears are often projections of our own anxieties, and reality is rarely as scary as we imagine it to be.
It's an important message, especially for young readers. It encourages them to question their fears and to look beyond the surface.
And it's not just about confronting our own fears, mm-hmm. but also about recognizing the fears of others.
Right. Just because we don't share someone's fear doesn't mean it's not valid.
Exactly. And the book takes it a step further by showing how our own fears and prejudices can make us the monsters in someone else's story.
Like when Melinda refers to humans as the Trisk.
That's a powerful moment.
Hmm.
It shows how easily we can become the very thing we fear.
It's a sobering thought. The book challenges us to consider how our actions might be perceived by others, especially those who are different from us.
It's a reminder that communication and understanding are essential in bridging those differences.
And in this story, it's ultimately friendship that saves the day.
Matthew and Melinda's friendship with Dorby helps them overcome their fear and prejudice.
And it even seems to contribute to Dorby's, well, multiplication.
I never thought of it that way, but you're right. It's like their friendship provides that metaphorical water he needs to reproduce.
And that transformation extends to Matthew and Melinda as well. They face their fears, embrace the unknown, and learn to see the world through different eyes.
And they've discovered a passion for science and exploration, symbolized by Melinda's photographs of the stars.
It's like their journey into Dorby's world has opened up a whole new universe of possibilities for them.
It's a beautiful reminder that even seemingly simple children's stories can have a profound impact on us.
They can inspire us to see the world in new ways and to never stop exploring the wonders that surround us.
But you know, there's still one big question that lingers.
What's that?
What exactly is this connection between Matthew's bed and Dorby's world?
It's a mystery, isn't it?
The book doesn't explain it explicitly, but we do get some clues.
Like the alignment of the moons in Dorby's world, it's almost like some kind of interdimensional phenomenon, you know?
Yeah.
Linked to astrophysics that we don't even understand yet.
Yeah, it really makes you think.
Like, are there other portals out there? Other ways for our world to connect with different dimensions or realities?
It's a fascinating concept.
It is. And the fact that the portal closes when the moons are out of alignment, well, it makes it seem even more mysterious, doesn't it?
It does. It's like these connections are fleeting, just brief glimpses into other possibilities.
It makes you wonder what else is out there, just beyond our reach.
Exactly.
I mean, what if what we consider reality is just one small part of a much larger, more intricate picture?
Now that's a mind-blowing thought.
And the book's ending, you know, with Matthew and Melinda inspired to explore the stars, it suggests that the journey doesn't end with the closing of the portal.
Right. It's like their curiosity has been ignited.
They started out afraid of what was under the bed, and now they're looking up at the stars, searching for answers.
It's a beautiful transformation.
It really is. It's a reminder that even seemingly simple children's stories can hold profound truths.
They can spark our imaginations in ways we might never have anticipated.
Well said. So, listener, what if your fears turned out to be something completely unexpected? What if under your bed there's a portal to another world just waiting to be discovered? Maybe it's time to take a closer look. Embrace your curiosity and never stop exploring.
Explore the wonders that surround us.
Both big and small. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Don't Look Under the Bed. Until next time, keep looking up.